Brothers and sisters, the Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. As Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside by themselves, and he said to them on the way, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked, scourged, and crucified, and he will be raised on the third day." Then the mother of Zebedee's sons of Zebedee approached Jesus with her sons and did him homage, wishing to ask him for something. He said to her, "What do you wish?" She answered him, "Command that these two sons of mine sit, one at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." Jesus said in reply, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the chalice that I'm going to drink?" They said to him, "We can." He replied, "My chalice you will indeed drink, but to sit at my right and my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." When the 10 heard about all this, they became indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus summoned them and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just so the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. It's been 30 years, and my memory is not, you know, it has its difficulties. On the east side of the temple, at the base of the hill, is something we normally call the Kidron Valley. And on the opposite side of the Kidron Valley is the Mount of Olives. And at the base of the mountain, it's down toward the end, past the temple more so than it is directly across. But anyhow, there's a kind of sense in which that's what's going on. And at the base of the Mount of Olives is a garden of the olive press, where you crush the olives to get the oil out of. That's called Gethsemane, place of crushing. Then you can walk from that place there down to the Kidron Valley and up these stairs they think are the original stairs up to Caiaphas' house. And then probably the stairs the Lord was led on when he was arrested. The church up there is called... where Caiaphas' house is called St. Peter and Gallicantu. St. Peter of the Cockcrow. Of course, remember the embers and the fires, and, you know, before the night is ended, you will have betrayed, you know, renounced me. Anyhow, in Caiaphas' house, he was the high priest. You don't expect this in a priest's house, right? But there's a jail in the cellar, okay? There's a jail in the cellar for people who committed religious crimes. And so there's shackles on the wall where they would have had prisoners shackled and so forth. And for the worst and most detestable and most dangerous criminals, there was a pit. And they just lowered you down into the pit, and you stayed there. There was no standing room. There was no buckets for this or that. You just stood there. in darkness, complete and utter darkness. They think that's where they kept Jesus overnight after the trial before the Sanhedrin, or at least at Caiaphas's house. I bring that up today because Jeremiah shows up on the radar screen now. I think if you read his words and take them into Jesus' heart, there's such a rich sense of what's going on. This is one of the most sensitive prophets ever to have walked the land of Israel, to have spoken to the people of Judah. I bring this up today, the pit thing, because they threw Jeremiah in a pit before they cast him out of town. He was a heart that could take, that was being humiliated, rejected, and then is cast out. And at the same time, he's a heart who unites himself to the sorrows of Israel, to the failings of the people. It's almost like he cries out to God, "They're so weak. Please give them a new heart. Please give them new strength." And of course, from him is going to come the prophecy that we will get new hearts in the days to come. Today, when Jesus talks about his crucifixion and resurrection, there's a lot. I'm not sure I'm going to get through half of this, just because he gives things a nod in passing. He says, the Son of Man, if you take this like, take it into the book of Daniel, this is the triumphant person who brings about the kingdom of heaven, is going to be handed over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will want to put him to death. A death sentence, says the Son of Man, we hold you to be a sinner of the gravest sort. And of course, you and I know the wind up to this is going to be, they're going to call him a blasphemer for calling God his Father and for forgiving sins and breaking the Sabbath by healing. So in a way, they're going to say to them, you're the worst worshiper on the face of the earth. You have the falsest worship to offer people. You false prophet, you blasphemer, you sinner. At least the pagans have the idols, and they point to those idols as their gods, but you're pointing to yourself, misleading the people of Israel. And so the chief priests, the people who have the gravest obligation before God to be leaders of God's people into true and right worship, are going to be condemning Jesus as a false worshiper, the sinless one as the greatest sinner. And then they're going to turn him over to the political authorities, Gentiles. They're in charge of seeing that humanity comes to its fullness. That's what political authority is about, to bring human life to its fullness as human. And there's a certain sense in which it should be under the, you know, under the light and in the light of worshiping God. But nevertheless, this crew of the Roman power is saying it is the highest exalted power over all the earth, and we're even led by gods. Our emperor is divine, and all the rest of this stuff is floating through the background of all this. And now the people who are supposed to guard people's hearts before God, people's humanity among humanity, are going to take him. And if you walk through the indignities of what are about to happen, and you and I treated an animal that way, you and I would look at, we would be right for everybody to look at us with disgust and spit on us. Treated worse than an animal. And this is the Roman Empire's way of saying, don't mess with us. And so, as I said yesterday, you know, we can look at it, and then, you know, everybody else around, like three quarters of the crowd are going to be mocking Jesus, right? Even the guy on the next cross is going to be mocking him, okay? This isn't just suffering, pain, and exquisite and almost incomprehensible pain. In the body, this is having one's heart ripped out from the inside. For all of the instruments of care that God gave to creation to embrace hearts and lift up and fulfill humanity are now turned against Jesus. When you crucify a man, he becomes on the cross a writhing ball of pain, with nothing else but crying coming out of his heart, if he has any energy to do it whatsoever. The fact that he could speak during all this is almost a miracle. Anyhow, I said yesterday, this is the picture of sin disfiguring humanity, and he's no longer the noble, wonderful, beautiful human being. He's something writhing on the cross, being treated worse than anybody with a half a heart could treat an animal. And this is some kind of overshadowing of God, because he's no longer in our midst teaching us with words. That's an ordinary way of meeting God, teaching us with words. And doing those extraordinary things of healing, raising the dead, and freeing people. There's something of sin being broadcast to us in front of our faces there. And this is a satisfaction for our sins. He comes to give his life as a ransom for many. There's more to be said about that, but I think I have to get out of here soon. Maybe the best answer to John and James and the mother, well, it's the answer that he gives in the book of John, the Gospel of John. Greater love has no one than to lay down his life for his friends. Now, there's been a lot of flirtatious looks through the history of mankind, wooing words, but this is the coyest, most devastating invitation to love that I've ever heard in my entire life. He's saying, let me be your friend. Let us build a home, a house, where virtue of the most superlative and pure kind can reign, where the one and only God of all the universe is worshipped from the bottom of our hearts. Let us find a place where each and every one of us holds each and every one of us in esteem and grows each other and encourages each other and holds each other as images of God. I don't know about you, but I've been flirted with and I've been wooed, but this one knocks me out. So he calls to us today, second week into Lent. And he says, listen, I came to serve. I came to offer my life for you and you and you and you.